You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of February 23rd, 2022, and Scott knows Kung Fu.
Whoa. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
And I'm George Abor.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It is a serious but not humorless conversation about video games. And this week, we're playing some more games because, as anyone who has listened for any length of time might guess, come Friday, George and I will be quite occupied with another video game.
It's a weird place to be. I do feel like I'm biding my time, you know, because... there's, you know, a few games have come out. One of the ones that we'll be talking about today, but Horizon, for example, also came out. And yep. I thought to myself, you know, maybe I should give it a shot. It's a new game. I got the PS5 sitting there. Yep. I got some time. But the moment I think, okay, well, I know that when Elden Ring comes out, I will not be playing anything but Elden Ring.
Yeah.
And it will be for a while, right? Like, I got work. I'm a busy person. There's only so much Elden Ring I can play. And once I'm done, I'll probably just play it again, like, right away. So I can't commit to anything. And so instead, you know, I'm kind of twiddling my thumbs and playing other, you know, random stuff.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about a couple games that we've been playing. Squeeze some in before we do some Elden Ring first impressions coming up soon here.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that. Well, maybe we chat a little bit. I mean, we can maybe we flip the script. Do you want to, like, should we say anything about that before it comes out, or do we dare? I mean, let's be real. I was already talking to Han about this. I was like, we are clearly on the hype train for this thing, and I barely even look at any of the marketing material. So, like, it's already worked. It's already done its dark art on me. Like, I don't know how, I don't know where you're at mentally with it.
I mean, for sure, I'm super hyped. I have watched some of the marketing. There's a YouTube channel called The Lore Hunter that I've been watching. He produced a video every single day since the game was announced, specifically the trailer, rewatching the trailer. And he would talk about some tidbit or, you know, deliver some new theory. But that guy stuck it the fuck out. And then he finally... you know, new content was dropping and he was talking about it. And it was fun to, like, sort of speculate and watch with him. I think once the test server came out, that's when I started to be a little bit more cautious around spoilers.
Yeah.
But, you know, every now and then that I've peeked, it still seems like there's a lot that we don't know.
Yeah.
There was a launch trailer that came out, I think yesterday, maybe the day before. Did you watch it at all?
Nope. Haven't watched it yet.
I recommend you not watch it.
Okay.
Because... there's a couple of boss fights in there that I hadn't seen before that I think are really cool looking, and I would recommend that you keep that to yourself until you
keep it pure.
yeah, super hyped.
I'm the same way. It's the first game in a long time that I've thought about this much pre-release.
Are you concerned at all following Sekiro? Because, you know, we've talked about both of us not loving that game as much as we had expected.
I
know this feels like a return to form, but it is a different genre in an open world game, and you know, George R. Martin has written it, I guess, some of it, so, like, it doesn't at least from a marketing perspective, it's not solely the from the minds of Miyazaki. It is not a Dark Souls game, right? It's not Bloodborne. This isn't Dark Souls 4. So it is new. Does that make you trepidatious at all?
I mean, I think we talked a little bit about this recently, where I think even though Sekiro didn't do it for us, it was reassuring to see them just take such a wide swing away from what they had done, which means at minimum, you know, we're going to pay our money to play something that will most likely be at least interesting.
Yeah.
Which, in a weird way, is, you know, if I wanted a game that, if I was indexing towards a sure bet, I'd be playing Horizon right now.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm indexing more towards something that will surprise me, or something that will have a new spin on something that maybe, I don't know, I'd much rather have something that I don't 100% like and it be interesting and new versus something that I know that I'll like, which again is why I could be playing Horizon right now, but I played some of Horizon 1. I think I know pretty much what that game's going to be, and it looks great for what it is, but I am interested in what From Software is going to do because they clearly are willing to take some swings.
Yeah. I guess on the other side, do you feel a lot of pressure to plow through Elden Ring, you think, when it comes out? To partake in the conversation?
It is hard. And especially, what if it's is it a Strand game? Because like you have an incentive to play when everyone else is playing.
It is.
Yeah. So it's like.
Well, but to be fair, though, like you can jump into Dark Souls 2 right now and you'll still find people to play with.
That's fair. I think there's something about the discovery that is fun. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're playing a game that is so much like exploration based or secrets based, it's kind of fun to be with the community.
Especially for an open world game, right? Because there are stories to tell. Like I remember when you and I were first playing Breath of the Wild, and I think it was something like, maybe it was like a meteor or something, and you were like, follow it. Yeah. Next time you see it at night, follow it and try to find where it lands. Like that kind of stuff, it's a little bit exhilarating, right? Because it's like you can share these... not urban legends, but like myths or elements from the lore that you've gotten just a taste of because your experience might be drastically different from mine because I might have gone to the left and you went to the right, you know?
Yep.
And I think some of that exists in Dark Souls and Bloodborne a little bit because you can ask someone like, oh, have you been to, Upper Cathedral Ward yet? Or, you know, ask questions like that. But for the most part, it's relatively a linear game. And so... those secrets that you share are, you know, maybe, about an item description or something rather than as expansive as, you know, where in the open world did you go to explore?
Yeah, I agree. And again, it's just who knows how it's going to land, but it seems like it's trying something different from a studio that is well known for a specific thing. And it would be so easy to stick with that thing. And the fact that even structurally having it an open world is something that is different. So it's just very, like I said, it's been a long time since I've been this excited about playing a game, a specific title, that a huge AAA title anyway.
Yeah. Wild. Yeah. Well, just a few more days. I think the preload is available now, actually.
Oh, boy.
So get on that.
Get it all set up.
Did you end up getting it on PC or PlayStation 5?
I think I'm going to do PlayStation 5 because my PC is a bit long in the tooth. And so it'll just be more of a sure thing if I do a PS5.
I did PC, but I feel like I should just maybe get it on both now. You know, I have Dark Souls on both. I would have Bloodborne on PC if I could.
You need it on any screen that you could potentially be in front of at any given time.
Look, the reason is because if someone said, hey, George... I'm new to Dark Souls. You want to come and do co-op? My answer will always be yes.
Yeah.
So
you tell me where to be. I'll meet you there.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about a couple games that we are playing in the interim.
Yes.
What do you want to start with? The two games are Subnautica and Sifu.
Well, I'll start because mine is an older game. And I, this is a nod to Mark Sidwell, who sent us an email, a listener to the show. Don't let people tell you we do not take your recommendations to heart. He recommended Subnautica in a recent email, and I caved and I decided to play it. Why? Because it's available on Game Pass, so it was totally free. And I was desperate to play a game and wait for Elden Ring. Subnautica, if you're unaware, it's actually a really cool premise, right? The idea is you are in a spaceship and you crash land on an ocean world and you are inside of your single floating, I don't know what you would call it, escape pod, I guess.
Yeah.
And your escape pod has like a fabricator and some emergency items and some shit that is broken. Now go and survive. You have to jump in the water. You got to find food. You got to find scrap and resources to then craft and repair your items on your little thing and eventually sort of build out your capabilities and explore the underwater world. This is not a game for people that are scared of the ocean. It is at times genuinely terrifying. You know,
is it thalassophobia?
Yeah, that's thalassophobia.
Like the dark, deep water or something.
Oh yeah. I mean, and you know, at the beginning you're in a kind of shallowy water areas, just sort of swimming around, right? You don't have any flippers on. You're going pretty slow. You're checking out some fish. You know, there's some cave systems that are kind of neat. But then eventually you start exploring, you know, seaweed forests or going quite deep into darkened areas. At one point, the ship that you were on explodes and sort of creates a radiation mark, but it frees up an area for you to explore. And you are very, very deep, and there are some very large creatures that you will not see coming until they're right fucking behind you. The music is wonderfully cute because it is, you know, it's contextual, so it will know, oh, you're in this region with this, you know, creature nearby, and will start to play that unsettling music and just like shoot to the surface as fast as I can. You know, it's very, it's pretty neat.
Is so the loop of this game, is it, am I correct in kind of understanding that it's a survival game?
Yes, it's a survival crafting game. So at this point, I've come to the part of the game where I really can start to invest into building out my underwater dome, right? So you eventually unlock the ability to find copper ore, find scrap metal, and build out complex machinery. Like, you have basically have a Star Trek fabricator, and you can make batteries, and you can make copper wire, and you can make computer chips, and eventually you can remake sort of underwater pods that you can then go inside, like underwater station, essentially, where you can then add other things like shelving units and, you know, new devices, and the game will start to expand and allow you to craft more and more to sort of fill out your home environment. You can even build like a table and chairs to chill, right? So that's where I'm at in the game. I think this is the point where I start to tune out a little bit, to be honest, because I'm at that phase where I really need to start crafting material. But what I will say is, up to now, this game is really good. It's very strong for a survival game. I think the idea of doing a having a survival experience not in a forest but underwater is just kind of neat. Like, it's not something that you've seen before, but it makes sense. It's a great excuse to have some really cool biomes for weird creatures to see, and that horror element, that component of being like unsettled by your space and feeling like I'm running out of oxygen and you have to go to the surface because you are, you know, by necessity out of your element as a human being. You know, you're not a fish person, so. With that in mind, I think it's such a cool environment to play in.
Mark mentioned something about a hunger mechanic. Is that something, have you been playing with the, because I mean the whole thing about crafting survival is that there's aspects to your character that you need to manage, and there's aspects to your environment and your equipment. Like, how much of it have you taken on?
So Mark recommended that I turn off hunger and thirst, which I took his recommendation and I did do. So I've not yet played with hunger and thirst. I don't think it's needed, to be honest. That's another system that I think you'd have to be concerned about. You know, a couple times I found a chest, for example, that had a water bottle in it, or, you know, maybe there's a way to like filter it or something, or find food and cook fish. I think that would feel to me like a lot of busy work. So I'm glad I turned it off. I also would hate to say put in a bunch of time and then drown and die or something and, you know, lose that progress. So I turned it off. I know some people who are really into survival games like that kind of stuff and keep it on, but I think I would take it or leave it. I am actually a little bit interested in playing the sequel. I guess it's a sequel, not an expansion. It's Subnautica something Frozen. I'd have to take a look. So this is a game that is set in a icy environment. So there's like snow and stuff, but most importantly, there is above ground exploration as well as underwater exploration. So to me, like, that might be a cool little way of like mixing things up. Oh, Subnautica Below Zero is what it's called.
And it's an expansion, or is it a true?
It's a whole new game. It's a whole separate experience. I also understand that Subnautica Below Zero has a more through narrative. Like, it's got an actual narrative that it develops. The original Subnautica has it a little bit. Like, I picked up radio signals, for example, but beyond that, you're pretty much alone. So,
is the flora and fauna exclusively hostile?
No, there's a lot of fish that are just chilling, doing their fishy thing. You know, there's a couple of like cool looking whale creatures and like weird jellyfish and stuff. I mean, the scariest stuff that you can find are, of course, very large, creepy fish. But they're also like exploding, you know, orbs, or like underground creatures that are like slithering underneath the sort of sand at the bottom that then jump out. Those kinds of things are hostile, but I've not yet encountered a region that felt too unmanageable from a hostility perspective.
I think it's cool to have the ocean setting, because it is so alien to us, but also so is our own ocean.
Yes.
If we were to go down there, so there's a certain...
And I will not.
Yeah, I mean, there's just horrifying creatures down there. And also just the idea of, you know, the whole infinite depth sort of thing is, yeah, is inherently freaky. So I like that.
Well, an alien, right? Genre. Like, yeah, there's such weird creatures in our own Earth system, you know, and it's like underwater jellyfish that are like super long and shaped like boxes and stuff. Like, there's really cool shit down there. And so it lends itself well to a video game environment because you could be as crazy as you want and it's still somewhat believable, you know, as opposed to, say, fighting another bear for the millionth time.
So. how involved is the crafting? Like, do you
Very.
And okay, so it is like, and do you like save your recipes or do you have to figure out exactly how to make each thing? Or
so
how do
you will scan things in the environment, and as you scan elements from your destroyed ship, for example, you will unlock recipes that you can then fabricate. But everything is nested, right? So you might need, say, a battery and copper wire to make whatever, like, I don't know, a computer kit or something, and then use that kit to produce another thing. So it's chained like that. It's quite robust. I mean, I'm sure there are plenty of survival. I'm not a survival game expert by any means.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are survival games that have far more robust crafting systems. But from my perspective, there's quite a bit. Yeah, I mean, it seems very rich to me. And certainly there are moments when you know, okay, well, I want to craft this, which means I need to go two steps back, which means I need copper ore. Okay, copper ore looks like this underwater and grows in this area, and you can sort of make a mental map of where you're going. That's the other thing that I'll say that I think is really cool about this game that I think not a lot of other survival games have the opportunity to do that are strictly above land, is I think it really creates this opportunity to understand the 3D environment and have a mental image in your head of it. Because it's not super easy to leave markers, you know, like you have to sort of navigate almost by the things that you see in the environment, right? That's a kind of a cool thing to do. And it's almost impossible to imagine giving someone a map, right? Like you eventually build a glider, like this thing that you could sort of zoom around underwater with. And it has a tiny little map on it to give you the topography of where you're at. But it's not realistically useful, right? Like how do you have a map of a 3D underwater world with cave systems and stuff? It's very challenging to do. Whereas for an open world survival game that's above land, you can have a map system and see a little ping and know, okay, well, I need to go north or south or east or west or whatever to find these goods. You can mark the map of like forest here, whatever here. They don't give you those tools in Subnautica. Maybe it's something that comes in Below Zero, maybe later in the game, or maybe it's something that I missed where they do offer you those tools. But without them, I think it makes that 3D environmental navigation that much more compelling because you really have to lean on your own senses to navigate it.
That's cool. I mean, I like you, I haven't been into a kind of survival game for some time. And it's kind of cool to check in and see what the like what the current state of things is. I know Subnautica is quite a popular game, so I'm happy to hear about that.
Tell me about Sifu. I really want to play this game. I've been watching video of it, and it looks really cool.
It is very cool.
Like stylish. It looks stylish.
Yeah, it is. It is highly stylish. It is a kung fu kind of genre inspired beat 'em up. And I think to me that is the most striking thing about it. Where it is, you know what? It's very funny. It was the recent topic we were discussing of the what if, where it's like, what if Final Fight kept evolving? Or like, what if all of those cheesy Ninja Turtles games or the Batman arcade brawler game or whatever, like, what if all of those games continued to evolve into something that wasn't just the Scott Pilgrim game nostalgia play?
Yeah.
You know, what would that look like if they continued adding on to the systems of
Double Dragon?
Of Double Dragon. And this is it. This is the answer to it. And it's extremely challenging. I mean,
this guy I'm watching makes it look easy, Scott. So I think this is user error.
It is so. The funny thing though is that again, this is a great warm up for a From Software game because I've been playing the game. I think there's five areas. I am on the boss of the third area right now, and there have been definitely areas in the past where I'm like, well, maybe this is where I punch out. This is impossible. How do I possibly fight all these guys? Or this boss is just ridiculous, so cheap, so cheesy, I can't possibly do it. And then I do it, and then I go back, and I'm like, how did I ever not do this? This is simple. This is easy.
Yeah, it's just so, like, it's a simple pattern, A, B, A, B, C.
I mean, it is so... It has that thing of you do, if you are paying attention, you get subtly better at it until you realize, wow, like none of those people even touched me. Like I went through that entire room and didn't even take a hit. Whereas in the first few runs, I wiped, you know, fully, you know, some guy just blasted me with a baseball bat and I was gone.
Yeah.
And so it has that, there's a satisfying rhythm to the game of getting better. And getting better in a very skill-based way. You know, you can unlock new moves, but you're not unlocking stats. You know, yeah. You're just getting better at the combat patterns. So that sort of stuff has been cool. It also has, you know, persistent and run-based elements. So if you unlock certain items, and basically it is kind of it's a unique unlock system where let's say you... There's a roundhouse kick that you can unlock.
Sure.
You unlock it the first time, and then if you die, it gets locked again. However, if you invest your stats in it like 5 times in a row in the same run, you unlock it permanently. So
interesting. Okay.
You know, there's and really it makes the when curve of the game. When you say run,
like if you wipe, do you restart the whole game?
You do. Ooh, but
brutal.
But they do. The one I would say the major flaw with the game so far, in my opinion, is that it doesn't explain itself very well. The onboarding of all the systems is somewhat opaque. Where, well, actually, the most important thing to know is that when you're in the game and you're just in a level, doing all of your fights, if you lose all your health, you die, but you don't get kicked out of the level. What happens is, there's like an economy of your death. So when you die, one token gets added to that economy. And then to get back in the game, you get those years added to you. It's like an age-based system. You start the game
as a
20-year-old. And so like every time you die, it adds 1 year to your buyback. And so it's like you die the first time, great. To get back into the game, you've now gone from 20 to 21. Those deaths never go down. And so the next time you die, oh shit, it's going to cost me 2 years to get back into the game. So now I'm 23 when I die. And then the next time you die, oh shit, I've gone up to 26, you know, like, and so.
So it goes exponential until you're like 500 years old.
Well, once you get to age 70, if you die again,
that's in real
life. That's the end of the run. As we all know, the best way to die is in your 70s in a street fight. So this game...
Oh, man. Sign me up, dude.
This game lets me fulfill that fantasy. But I mean, I think mechanically it's interesting because those first couple deaths are like, all right, I get it. Like, you know, but every subsequent death, the stakes are higher because...
So how old is your character right now?
Well... Your character, so that's another thing that isn't super well defined. So you start the game in level 1 at age 20.
Yep.
And then however old you get at the end of level 1 is what you enter level 2 on. And so if let's say you beat level 1 and you're 35, you start level 2 at age 35. However, you can go back to level 1 and try for a lower age. So you can get, like, I've gotten through level 1 at age 23, and so now whenever I start level 2, even if I don't do level 1 first, I start at age 23. So basically you, like, lock yourself in at an age.
So I guess the idea of what I'm hearing, right, is you're incentivized to replay that first set in order for you to have more economy to play with in your later runs.
Exactly. And there's different types of runs you can do where it's like I've done experience runs where I'm just going to start at the beginning and I'm going to get a bunch of XP and a bunch of, there's kind of run-based unlocks where it's like, I have this temporary buff of weapons do more damage. But when I fully wipe after age 70, that goes away. And so the more of those you pick up in levels 1 through 3 or 4, the more powerful you are. But the cost benefit is that you probably have accumulated more years along the way.
Yeah. It's like going to college, you know? You come out and you're like, oh my God, I'm unemployable and I'm old.
I mean, there is something somewhat...
Getting an advanced degree, I guess, is more...
Well, I mean, we've all been there where... I think this game does a surprisingly evocative job of how time speeds up, where your 20s in this game do last for a while, and your 30s are like, oof, that went kind of quick. And then by the time you're in your 40s, you're usually at like a 4 to 6 amount buy-in. So basically, yeah, you can die once or twice in your 40s, and then you're in your 50s. Whereas in your 20s, you can die multiple times and you're still in your 20s, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Man, I wish I was in my 20s again.
I mean,
but alternatively, though, you're not as good at kung fu.
Well, that's the other thing that they do, where every decade you like the decades are milestones. So when you hit age, you know, 30, you can't learn some skills anymore. So you had to have invested that XP before you got to age 30. Same deal with 40 and 50 and beyond. But what they do is, your health, your overall health bar decreases as you get older, but your attack power increases. And so by the end, wow, in age 70, you're this fucking deadly ass old man, but you could only take a few hits before you die.
I gotta say though, like thematically within the universe of like kung fu films, that is choice. That's very,
it
is cool.
I mean, yeah, it's very resonant to kung fu movies. And I think that's like the mechanics. Again, I think the weakest part of them are actually that they're not explained super well.
Yeah.
You know, as evidenced by the fact that it's taken me 10 minutes to explain all of the fucking, you know, mechanics of this game. But yeah, I enjoy it quite a bit. And it definitely has that. I've certainly played the game much later at night than I have meant to, because it's like, oh, if I can do one more run through the club, and then I can be in a better position for the museum. So I'm just going to do that one more run, you know,
yeah,
and it has that to it.
One of the reasons I think this style of game, specifically taking the Sekiro, what is the system called? Like exhaustion?
Yes. So barrier? That's the whole, this one is called, shoot, it's not called poise. It's called something else. Sturdiness or something? Shoot,
sure.
I don't know what it is. It's something like that.
Yeah, the idea of breaking someone's poise or sturdiness, yeah, or whatever.
Yeah.
I think one of the reasons it works so well for this type of cinematic experience that they're trying to create is it incentivizes you to have those ideal runs, right? You want to keep, yeah, that pressure up before that poise meter goes away,
yeah,
which means you need to execute in a way that is by definition cinematic, right? Dodging, yeah, attacking, dodging, attacking, being aggressive with it, and then breaking it, and then ending in this triumphant, yeah, moment where you finish someone off.
Yeah.
That is how these fight scenes, a well-choreographed fight scene, plays out. Even if you take a couple of hits, you come back and you know, you're flowing with it, and you're executing in that beautiful way, right?
Yeah.
The Genichiro fight in Sekiro, I have watched myself redo that fight like 6 or 7 times, because I recorded it and posted it on Twitter years ago.
Right.
And it is so cool to watch me do that, because it's like, I didn't even realize I could do that. You know, it, yeah, looks so cool.
Yep.
And it reminds me of how exciting it was to watch myself execute to such a fine degree. And watching people play this game, I know these types of games can be very challenging,
yeah,
even from a design perspective, or even as a player buying into this experience, because you hear, oh, I'm this awesome kung fu artist, and then you die, yep, a lot, and it sucks, and it's frustrating. But,
yeah,
man, when you earn it, when you get to that point where you're really executing, it's got to feel good, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, there are certain... To your point, you know, there are times where you can really just eat it quickly. And I mean, it's... I think this is just kind of a overall direction that games are headed these days, but... Even the lowest level grunt, if you're not paying attention, you can be fucked up by it easily. Like,
sure,
you know, they don't hold anything back. But there are times in the game where once you realize how to properly parry and like what moves knock people down, which gives you more space to fight someone else while they're staggered, and then you push someone into a wall, and then you grab a weapon, you get into that flow state, and it is great. It's fucking great. They do an amazing job in this game of modernizing the brawler so that it feels natural in the environment. It's like if you're close to something, your character will contextually, you know, slam someone against a wall, or, you know, someone, the finishing move will make use of a railing that's close to you. And
yeah, thanks Uncharted.
It really, I don't know what the breakthrough was, but it feels like games are very good at this stuff now in a way that makes it very natural, which has been fun to go through. But to your
maybe
point,
that's what,
you know,
brawlers needed, you know,
I think it is. And I think there have been times where, like, they throw a lot of enemies at you. You know, they throw, like, you know, upwards of, I don't know, 10 enemies or something at a time at you in a room. And at first you're like, this is impossible. How can I fight all of these people? And you realize that there's techniques and there's spacing, and it kind of starts to feel more like a fighting game at some points. And then especially in the later levels that I started to get into now, they do a lot of cool stuff with the art. There is in the very first level, they do kind of like a, I forget what movie it is. There's like a kung fu fight in a hallway. Maybe it's Old Boy.
Oh, yeah.
Where the game is, for the most part, kind of third person behind the back. But in this scene, you enter a very long hallway.
Watched that scene.
And then it
becomes a side scroller.
It goes into a side scrolling, like, and you're just like kicking ass through this whole hallway, like just wasting people like left and right. And they do other things too, where they start to get fantastical, where there's kind of like supernatural-esque type of people. And they do a lot of stuff with lighting where, you know, all of a sudden the entire screen will turn red and just you and the enemies are just kind of pure white lights. And so you can't really see any of the detail. You can just see like the shadows of these two figures fighting.
Yeah.
It's just sick because, like, not only is it cool to look at, it tests your understanding of the fundamentals of the momentum, not just the look of the game, where it's like, okay, I don't need to see all the detail because I understand what these outlines are doing, and I've learned the game to such a degree that I don't even need to see the kind of context, the contextual cues. I can just see the motion of the move and know what's coming.
And
there are even like little things where it's like there's a fight in the snow where, like, if you drop one of your weapons, it's like legitimately hard to find it because it's buried in the snow. And so, like, I'm running away from this lady that has these fucking bladed ninchaku or whatever, and I'm like searching desperately for my bow staff that I took into this fight because I really wanted it.
Oh, because if you get hit, you might drop it.
Yeah, because there's certain moves that you can drop, and that's another thing. Like, later in the game, you start to fight a lot more enemies with weapons, and so I started understanding that I needed to get better at moves and invest in unlocks that cause people to drop things.
Oh yeah.
Whereas I initially didn't invest in that, and I'm like, fuck, these guys are like destroying me with these knives. And then I realized, oh, half of these moves that I didn't unlock have an attribute where they could cause people to trip or fall to the ground, which usually means that they drop their weapon. And so you kind of learn things as you face different types of enemies. So, I mean, this sounds like I'm really bagging on Sekiro, but I think this is what I wanted Sekiro to be from a combat perspective.
Yeah.
Not from a, like, a design or world building perspective, but I think where Sekiro lost me, because in Sekiro you get hit twice and you fully start the whole battle over, this, there's more give and take. Like, there is that stamina meter flow that means that both you and the boss can go back and forth, and you actually can kind of get into a run versus like getting one shot and then you have to make your corpse run again, and then it's frustrating. So I think they took the kind of martial arts style and lessons but paired it up more nicely with something that actually feels better as a game in a very similar way, but not as binary, you know. It does feel weirdly like some of those old Jackie Chan movies where you're just kind of figuring it out. Like, you're like flipping over a table to like put some space in between someone, grabbing a broom to hit somebody, like getting whacked in the back, but then recovering with a parry or something. Like,
yeah.
It's just much more like, it's just a lot more, there's a lot more room for creativity. Whereas Sekiro was like, you're either going to do this shit the right way or fuck you, you know, where it's like, this is like, oh, okay. Like, this is a puzzle, and it's satisfying to solve it.
It's cool to see the different environments that you're in as well, because you could imagine trying to position yourself in a way that uses that in your favor, you know?
for the longest time, I was not properly doing that, where, you know, you can vault over a table or put some space in between you by, you know, jumping over, you know, jumping up a wall and kind of like leading people around to pick them off. And it's an important lesson to learn, because it's like, no matter how good you are at the game, I mean, obviously people are great at this already, I'm sure, but like, if you're just okay at the game, it is not super smart to take on five people at once. You know, yeah. it makes more sense to space them out and like get some distance. And so like, you know, using that is a cool thing.
Yeah, that's really cool. I think this game looks rad. I wish I had picked it up instead of just sort of cowardly waiting until Elden Ring. But I don't know. I think there's a good chance that I pick this up, you know, after I beat Elden Ring or just.
I'm interested in the uptake of this game, because I think like many of these types of games, it is most difficult earliest. Sure. And so yeah. It's like the learning curve is steep and the unlock curve is steep. And so you just got to wonder how people get over the hump. But I hope they do, because it's like I said, it's a cool window into what a truly modern brawler could be versus just a button mashy thing.
And this is the type of experience that I think if you have played Souls, you will be better at, right? Because part of it is just believing you can do it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you can do it. It's fine.
Yeah. It's like there is a pattern here, and you can learn it, and you can improve your reflexes and learn some of the like contextual utility of the different moves you have.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's definitely neat. I hope I have the chance to get through the whole thing, because I would like, even from an artistic style, I would like to kind of play through the rest of those levels, but it's steep right now. Like, I'm stuck at this boss, and I got to figure out what the secret is.
Interesting. All right. Well, good luck to you before Elden Ring. You know, you don't have much time to figure this shit out. 48
whole hours or whatever. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it'll be good. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I guess we'll leave it there for now, and then we'll see everyone on the other side. ExperiencePoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And ExperiencePoints.net is our dojo. You can also find us wherever you find podcasts. Do us a favor, tell a friend, leave us a review.
All right. Cool. Well, as always, thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all next week.
Ciao.